Chapter 12. Which, if he cared for omens, was hardly encouraging. Fearing to linger near lest he might be detected, Christopher stole a glimpse at the door and at the steps, imagined what a trifle of the depression worn in each step her feet intended to produce, and strolled home again. Feeling that his reasons for calling just now were scarcely sufficient, he went next day about the business that had brought him to town, which referred to a situation as organist in a large church in the Northwest District. The post was half insured already, and he intended to make of it the nucleus of a professional occupation and income. Then he sat down to think of the preliminary steps towards publishing the song that had so pleased her, and had also, as far as he could understand from her letter, hit the popular taste very successfully. A fact which, however little it may say for the virtues of the song as a composition, was a great recommendation to it as a property. Christopher was delighted to perceive that out of this position he could frame an admissible, if not an unimpeachable, reason for calling upon Ethelberta. He determined to do so at once, and obtained the required permission by word of mouth. He was greatly surprised, when the front of the house appeared in view on this spring afternoon, to see what a white and sightless aspect pervaded all the windows. He came close. The eyeball blankness was caused by all the shutters and blinds being shut tight from top to bottom. Possibly this had been the case for some time, he could not tell. In one of the windows was a card bearing the announcement, "This house to be let furnished." ... Here was a merciless clash between fancy and fact. Regretting now his faint-heartedness in not letting her know beforehand by some means that he was about to make a new start in the world, and coming to dwell near her, Christopher rang the bell to make inquiries. A gloomy caretaker appeared after a while, and the young man asked whither the ladies had gone to live. He was beyond measure depressed to learn that they were in the south of France. Arles, the man thought the place was called, the time of their return to town being very uncertain. Though one thing was clear, they meant to miss the forthcoming London season altogether. As Christopher's hope to see her again had brought a resolve to do so, so now resolve led to dogged patience. Instead of attempting anything by letter, he decided to wait. And he waited well, occupying himself in publishing a march, and a morning and evening service in E-flat. Some four-part songs too, engaged his attention when the heavier duties of the day were over, these duties being the giving of lessons in harmony and counterpoint, in which he was aided by the introductions of a man well known in the musical world, who had been acquainted with young Julian as a promising amateur long before he adopted music as the staff of his pilgrimage. It was the end of summer when he again tried his fortune at the house in Exonbury Crescent. Scarcely calculating upon finding her at this stagnant time of the town year, and only hoping for information, Julian was surprised and excited to see the shutters open, and the house wearing altogether a living look, its neighbors having decidedly died off meanwhile. "The family here," said a footman in answer to his inquiry, "are only temporary tenants of the house. It is not Lady Peterwin's people." "Do you know the Peterwin's present address?" "Underground, sir, for the old lady. She died some time ago in Switzerland, and was buried there, I believe." "And Mrs. Peterwin, the young lady," said Christopher, starting. "We are not acquainted personally with the family," the man replied. "My master has only taken the house for a few months, whilst extensive alterations are being made in his own on the other side of the park, which he goes to look after every day. If you want any further information about Lady Peterwin, Mrs. Peterwin will probably give it. I can let you have her address." "Yes, thank you," said Christopher. The footman handed him one of some cards which appeared to have been left for the purpose. Julian, though tremblingly anxious to know where Ethelberta was, did not look at it till he could take a cool survey in private. The address was Arrowthorne Lodge, Upper Wessex. Apostrophe apostrophe, dear me. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Christopher to himself, not far from Melchester, and not dreadfully far from Sandburn. Apostrophe apostrophe, 12. Arrowthorne Park and Lodge. Summer was just over when Christopher Julian found himself rattling along in the train to Sandburn on some trifling business appertaining to his late father's affairs, which would afford him an excuse for calling at Arrowthorne about the song of hers that he wished to produce. He alighted in the afternoon at a little station some 20 miles short of Sandburn, and leaving his portmanteau behind him there, decided to walk across the fields, obtain if possible the interview with the lady, and return then to the station, to finish the journey to Sandburn, which he could thus reach at a convenient hour in the evening, and, if he chose, take leave of again the next day. It was an afternoon which had a fungus smell out of doors, all being sunless, and stagnant overhead and around. The various species of trees had begun to assume the more distinctive colors of their decline, and where there had been one pervasive green were now 20 greenish yellows, the air in the vistas between them being half opaque with blue exhalation. Christopher in his walk overtook a countryman, and inquired if the path they were following would lead him to Arrowthorne Lodge. "'Twill take ye into Arrowthorne Park, apostrophe the man replied. But you won't come anigh the lodge, unless you bear round to the left as might be. Apostrophe 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 Mrs. Peterwin lives there, I believe? Apostrophe apostrophe no, sir. Leastwise unless she's but lately come. I have never heard of such a woman. Apostrophe apostrophe, she may possibly be only visiting there. Apostrophe apostrophe, ah, perhaps that's the shape odd. Well, now you tell odd, I have seen a strange face thereabouts once or twice lately. A young good-looking maid enough, seemingly. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, she's considered a very handsome lady. Apostrophe apostrophe, I've heard the woodman say, now that you tell odd, that they meet her every now and then, just at the closing in of the day, as they come home along with their niches of sticks, stalking about under the trees by herself a tall black martel, so long-legged and awful-like, that you'd think 'twas the old feller himself a-coming, they say. Now a woman must be a queer body to my thinking, to roam about by night so lonesome and that. Now that you tell odd, there is such a woman, but a never have showed in the parish. Sure I never thought who the body was no, not once about her, nor where I was living, and that not I, till you spoke. Well, there, sir, that's Arrowthorne Lodge. Do you see the three elms? Apostrophe apostrophe he pointed across the glade towards some confused foliage a long way off. I am not sure about the sort of tree you mean, apostrophe said Christopher. I see a number of trees with edges shaped like edges of clouds. Apostrophe apostrophe, they be oaks. I mean the elms to the left hand. Apostrophe apostrophe, but a man can hardly tell oaks from elms at that distance, my good fellow. Apostrophe apostrophe, that a can very well leastwise, if he's got the sense. Apostrophe apostrophe, well, I think I see what you mean, apostrophe said Christopher. What next? Apostrophe, when you get there, you bear away smart to northwest, and you'll come straight as a line to the lodge. Apostrophe apostrophe, how the deuce am I to know which is northwest in a strange place, with no sun to tell me? Apostrophe apostrophe, what, not know northwest? Well, I should think a boy could never live and grow up to be a man without knowing the four quarters. I knowed him when I was a mossel of a cheel. We be no great scholars here, that's true, but there isn't a Tom Rigg or Jack Straw in these parts that don't know where they lie as well as one. Now I've lived, man and boy, these 68 years, and never met a man in my life afore who hadn't learned such a common thing as the four quarters. Apostrophe apostrophe, Christopher parted from his companion and soon reached a stile, clambering over which he entered a park. Here he threaded his way, and rounding a clump of aged trees the young man came in view of a light and elegant country house in the half-timbered Gothic style of the late revival, apparently only a few years old. Surprised at finding himself so near, Christopher's heart fluttered unmanageably till he had taken an abstract view of his position, and, in impatience at his want of nerve, adopted a somber train of reasoning to convince himself that, far from indulgence in the passion of love bringing bliss, it was a folly, leading to grief and disquiet, certainly one which would do him no good. Cooled down by this, he stepped into the drive, and went up to the house. "Is Mrs. Peterwin at home?" he said modestly. "Who did you say, sir?" he repeated the name. "Don't know the person." "The lady may be a visitor I call on business." "She is not visiting in this house, sir."
"Is not this a Rothern Lodge?"
"Certainly not."
"Then where is a Rothern Lodge, please?"
"Well, it is nearly a mile from here, under the trees by the high road. If you go across by that footpath, it will bring you out quicker than by following the bend of the drive."
Christopher wondered how he could have managed to get into the wrong park, but, setting it down to his ignorance of the difference between oak and elm, he immediately retraced his steps, passing across the park again, through the gate at the end of the drive, and into the turnpike road. No other gate, park, or country seat of any description was within view. "Can you tell me the way to Rothern Lodge?"
he inquired of the first person he met, who was a little girl.
"You are just coming away from it, sir," said she.
"I'll show you. I am going that way."
They walked along together. Getting abreast the entrance of the park he had just emerged from, the child said,
"There it is, sir. I live there too."
Christopher, with a dazed countenance, looked towards a cottage which stood nestling in the shrubbery and ivy like a mushroom among grass.
"Is that a Rothern Lodge?"
he repeated.
"Yes, and if you go up the drive, you come to a Rothern House."
"A Rothern Lodge where Mrs. Peterwin lives, I mean."
"Yes. She lives there along with mother and we.
But she don't want anybody to know it, sir, 'cause she celebrate, and 'twon't do at all."
Christopher said no more, and the little girl became interested in the products of the bank and ditch by the wayside. He left her, pushed open the heavy gate, and tapped at the lodge door. The latch was lifted.
"Does Mrs. Peterwin," he began, and, determined that there should be no mistake, repeated,
"does Mrs. Ethelberta Peterwin, the poetess, live here?"
Turning full upon the person who opened the door.
"She does, sir," said a faltering voice, and he found himself face to face with the pupil teacher of Sandburn.
13. "The lodge," continued the copse behind, "this is indeed a surprise. I am glad to see you."
Christopher stammered, with a wire-drawn, radically different smile from the one he had intended, a smile, not without a tinge of ghastliness.
"Yes, I am home for the holidays,"
said the blushing maiden, and, after a critical pause, she added, "if you wish to speak to my sister, she is in the plantation with the children."
"Oh no, thank you, not necessary at all," said Christopher, in haste.
"I only wish for an interview with a lady called Mrs. Peterwin."
"Yes, Mrs. Peterwin, my sister," said Piketty. "She is in the plantation.
That little path will take you to her in 5 minutes."
The amazed Christopher persuaded himself that this discovery was very delightful, and went on persuading so long that at last he felt it to be so. unable, like many other people, to enjoy being satirized in words. Because of the irritation it caused him as aimed at victim, he sometimes had philosophy enough to appreciate a satire of circumstance, because nobody intended it. Pursuing the path indicated, he found himself in a thicket of scrubby undergrowth, which covered an area enclosed from the park proper by a decaying fence. The boughs were so tangled that he was obliged to screen his face with his hands, to escape the risk of having his eyes filliped out by the twigs that impeded his progress. Thus slowly advancing, his ear caught, between the rustles, the tones of a voice in earnest declamation, and, pushing round in that direction, he beheld through some beech boughs an open space about 10 yards in diameter, floored at the bottom with deep beds of curled old leaves, and cushions of furry moss. In the middle of this natural theater was the stump of a tree that had been felled by a saw, and upon the flat stool thus formed stood Ethelberta, whom Christopher had not beheld since the ball at Windway House. Round her, leaning against branches or prostrate on the ground, were 5 or 6 individuals. 2 were young mechanics, one of them evidently a carpenter. Then there was a boy about 13, and 2 or 3 younger children. Ethelberta's appearance answered as fully as ever to that of an English lady skillfully perfected in manner, carriage, look, and accent, and the incongruity of her present position among lives which had had many of nature's beauties stamped out of them, and few of the beauties of art stamped in, brought him, as a second feeling, a pride in her that almost equaled his first sentiment of surprise. Christopher's attention was meanwhile attracted from the constitution of the group to the words of the speaker in the center of it, words to which her auditors were listening with still attention. It appeared to Christopher that Ethelberta had lately been undergoing some very extraordinary experiences. What the beginning of them had been he could not in the least understand. But the portion she was describing came distinctly to his ears, and he... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.